ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Somebody read 13 yesterday, is that right? Or not? There's only half, well, not even one line purport. They gave a lecture on it. Who gave class yesterday? Pardon? Ganga gave? He gave a lecture on one line. Yesterday you heard, in battle with Krishna, I and my 23 armies lost 17 times. Only once did I defeat him. Is that the verse yesterday? Okay. That's a good purport on that one, really. I mean, you can certainly expand on it. Vidyananda Maharaj's purports are very short. You could have certainly extended a lot on the principle, although you lose many times. You know, still, try again. Eventually you'll be successful. That's the law of chance, isn't it? So today's verse is text 14. You're very brave, Yatra. Most temples turn back when they reach these past Prabhupada's purports. Start on the first canto again. Not many purports in this chapter, but it looks not very long ones anyway. The great section of the Bhagavatam, the marriage of Krishna and Rukmini. Tatapyahang na shochami. Na parishyami kahichit. Kalena daiva yuktena. Janan vidra vitang jagat. Tatapyahang na shochami. Na parishyami kahichit. Kalena daiva yuktena, janam vidravitam jagat. You've probably seen this. This is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries on this chapter. Not this chapter, the 10th canto. Commenting on the whole Bhagavatam, this is just the 10th canto. Prabhupada based a lot of his purports on the commentaries of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, as does Vidyananda Maharaj.
Tata-api.
Nonetheless. Aham. I. Shochami. Do not lament. Na prishyami. Do not rejoice. Kahichit. Ever. Kalena. By time. Deva. With fate. Yuktena. Conjoined. Janan. Knowing. Vidravitam. Driven. Jagat, the world. Translation and purport by His Holiness Vidyananda Maharaj and other devotees. But still, who is speaking here? Garasandha? But still, I never lament or rejoice, because I know this world is driven by time and fate. Jarasandha is talking. Shishupal, O tiger among men, Give up your depression. Shishupal was depressed because Krishna had made off with the booty, and he was left lamenting, depressed. Give up your depression. After all, embodied beings' happiness and unhappiness is never seen to be permanent, O king. Sandra was a very wise person. Very wise. I think he was the... was he Chankasi in Gauranga in Mahaprabhu's Leela? I think he was a Chankasi. Huh? Yeah, but in Mahaprabhu's Leela he also appeared, Jarasandha. I think he was Chankasi. He was a wise man. After all, just as a puppet in the form of a woman dances by the desire of the puppeteer, so this world, controlled by the Supreme Lord, struggles in both happiness and misery. In battle with Krishna, I and my 23 armies lost 17 times. Only once did I defeat them. Defeat Krishna. Didn't exactly defeat, as you know, you probably heard that yesterday, how Krishna purposely left the battlefield and went to that great mountain. You heard that yesterday, heard the whole pastime. How Krishna ran away from Jarasandha like a coward, like Rancho, he's known as Rancho. There's many temples in Gujarat and South Rajasthan where Krishna is worshipped as Rancho, famous one in Dakor. Some of you may have been there. Who's been to Dakor? I've also been to Dakor. Very wonderful place. So this particular pastime, Krishna performs all these wonderful pastimes, so we have something to think about and talk about. Otherwise we would become Mayavadis or just remain with all of our material thoughts in our minds. So he gives all these wonderful, wonderful pastimes, even the pastime of running away from the battlefield, going up the top of a mountain when he's very tired. I could never understand that. He says Krishna was very exhausted, therefore he climbed an 88-mile mountain to take rest. It's not the sort of thing you normally do when you're exhausted, climb up a mountain. What to speak of an 88-mile tall mountain? Because Krishna is Krishna, he can do anything he likes. But anyway, it's an interesting point. And of course he had other business to perform, and especially his business of dealing with this particular message of Rukmini. He very much was eager to fulfill Rukmini's desires. Now, of course this has already happened now, Krishna's already been to Kundina and stolen away Rukmini from the midst of all the kings, including Shishupal, who was very, very disturbed now, very depressed, and all the other kings who were so stunned by Rukmini's beauty. She's a young girl, 13 years, 14 most years of age, and they were overwhelmed by her beauty, a stunning beauty. You know how sometimes it is when something's very beautiful, we become completely enamored, we become overwhelmed, and we can practically lose our intelligence. Our mind just becomes completely absorbed, and the intelligence practically disappears. So they were not even aware of what was going on when Krishna stole her away. It took them a few moments to realize what was happening, and by that time Krishna was off on the chariot. So this is the nature of, as I say, lust in this world. It completely captivates a man's conscience, a woman too also. They can't think of anything else. They become bewildered, practically speaking, or unaware of other things going on around them. So some of them were falling off their horses or their chariots. They were stunned by her beauty. They were just mesmerized. And, of course, then there's nothing much they could do. They tried to, I don't know if they've already attacked. Have they already attacked Krishna, his armies? Okay, so they didn't get it together. I mean, with the army, other than Shishupal, the other kings, they all tried to stop Krishna, and Balaram, of course, very easily defeated them all, and they all went back. I don't know if you've done that already. Has that already happened? That's what happened, okay. So we're coming up to the stage now where Rukmi is following Krishna. Has that taken place? Mm-hmm. Not taken place yet, okay. And then, of course, later on the marriage will take place, I presume. The marriage of Krishna and Rukmi will take place later in this chapter. So these things take place, very wonderful. So Rukmi, of course, was residing, his father, Bhishmaka, was residing in a place called Kundinapur. Kundinapur is a very interesting place. Who's been to Kundinapur? Oh, okay, I got one up there. Dakor one, we were a few of us. And now Kundinapur, I've been there twice. Kundinapur is the place of marriage, Bhishmaka, and the place where Krishna stole away Rukmini. It's a very wonderful, it's hardly a village. There's no one, hardly anyone. There's a few people living there. Barely a village, we would describe it in India as a village at most, a hamlet. But there's quite a few temples. There's a temple there of Dwarkadish, and there's a temple of Durga Devi, and probably a few other small temples. Very interesting place, a beautiful river, I can't remember the name of it, which flows in that kind of village, through the village. And there's a few shops there because pilgrims do come there, although very few. Sometimes you go there, you're the only person there, except for this very faithful dog who seems to stand outside the door and follows you around when you go around the place. But basically speaking, there's very few people go there, except for festival days, maybe weekends and more. And it's an amazing place. And of course, the whole pastime of Krishna's stealing Rukmini as she was coming out of the Durga temple. There's a Durga temple up, there's like a little, on a little hamlet, little hill rather, and then there's the, like a little valley, and then there's the Dwarkadish temple here. And so somewhere between the two temples is said to be the place where Krishna stole Rukmini and took her back to Dwarka. So we've been given, or I don't know, been given, I think, as far as I know, given 4 acres of land right in that middle section between the two temples. So we're starting to build a temple. We're building a temple there. It's a very nice place, a very auspicious place. It's about, what would you say, 2 hours' drive from Nagpur. If you ever heard of Nagpur, Nagpur is like right in the center of India, right bang in the center, practically speaking. And after this incident, which was occurring here, Rukmini, he didn't go back there. It was a great city in those days, a capital of the province of Vidarbha, a great city. And now there's nothing there. Rukmini abandoned it. After very shortly after that, it was pretty much abandoned. So today you can go there. There's an ISKCON center coming up. It'll be a nice temple, probably maybe in a year or two it should be completed. Small temple to begin with, but then later on they may see what happens. They may build something bigger. Now regarding this particular incident here, the previous verse, I don't know if Ganga Prabhu mentioned it, but I wish I could. I wasn't prepared. There's a book called Krishna Samhita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It may not be in that one. As far as I can remember, it's in Krishna Samhita, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some interesting kind of comments on the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, especially, and on the various pastimes that Krishna performs. And this is a unique one, 17 times and 18 times. It kind of, why? Every time our friend Jarasandha would attack Mathura with his many Akshahinis of soldiers, millions upon millions of soldiers, like a tsunami flooding around the city, he would be defeated very easily by Krishna, without any ado. And he would come back again, it says every year, Krishna 18 years in Mathura. Jarasandha was coming. So goodness knows how he got the armies together again each time. Each time, and the last time it was the biggest. And that time Krishna had other plans, so he left. He left him alone. Well, it is described somewhere that there are different types of, I don't know what they're called. You might know this, Krishna Graj. In the Dharma Shastras, there are 18 particular kinds of stages. Like charity sacrifices of various kinds, material karma kanda stuff, leading up to moksha. The 18th is moksha. Krishna didn't want to have anything to do with moksha. He was prepared to smash all the others, but moksha he just left. He renounced it. He just didn't want to even look at it. So the 18th attack represented moksha. So he didn't want anything to do with it. It's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur somewhere. I can't remember the details. But there's always reasons behind these things, always. Some philosophical reason why 17 and 1. Well, it's not just, it could have been 2 and 1 or 50 and 1. There are always good reasons why these particular things happen. As we were hearing last night, not many of you were with us last night. Who was here last night? A couple of you, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you heard last night, I mean, I was hardly here last night either, barely hanging on. But last night we heard something about this particular month, which started yesterday, called Purushottam Mass, and this is very interesting because it's somewhat related to the purport, actually, regarding time, regarding the movements of days, weeks, months, and years, and lamentation, rejoicing. The whole world is driven by fate, by time and fate. And of course, I wish we could have prepared. This is a wonderful topic, and it'd be nice if someone really take it up sometime to really give a very, broad presentation of time, the time factor, which in Bhagavad Gita, one of the five items of Bhagavad Gita is time, but it's a little kind of vague. We can understand karma very easily, the living entity, the supreme personality of Godhead, and the material nature, very easy to understand. That's the five of them. They're very, very easy to understand. But time, because Krishna says, kalosmi, that I am time, I am. But, you know, you can understand it in other ways, you know, as a living entity passes from childhood to birth to old age and so on, to youth, to an old age and so on, the passing of time is going on. But the real understanding of time is quite not so easy. Sometimes that is the form of the super soul, the external form, and saying we can't see time, so to speak. Well, in one sense, we're looking at the clock here. Here's time. Time is ticking by. Clocks are everywhere. People didn't have clocks before. They would go, Hare Krishna. My brother was back. You were not here last time I came, I think. I think you were away. Yeah, you were away last time. Sorry. Away, Tommy. Sorry. We can go back again. You're sorry you're here this time, or sorry you were away last time?
No, you're here.
Oh, you're sorry now. Okay, that's good. So, you know, people should go by natural effects, but everyone's basically controlled by time. The feature of time is really, in a sense, it's the super soul. It's the way the super soul causes everything to change in this world, everything to move around, causes all the effects of this world. Of course, it's based on a living entity's desire and karma, which we sometimes call destiny, but this is activated by time. It's revealed, Prabhupada says, and imposed by the movements of time. It's described in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam how time, you know, the measurement of time, the time that the sun passes over an atom or something. I mean, it's very, you say, scientific. It's not my cup of tea. I mean, I could have prepared, but I didn't have any warning, and I didn't have any time, even if I had any warning. So I just, without, you know, I don't want to get into too much speculation on this, but we understand that time is a feature of the super soul. It's a feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, enacting the various movements of this world, directing the movements of the living entities in one sense, not internally, but externally, by making various arrangements, removing things and putting things in front of us. It's like, you know, we suddenly see this in front of us and it's gone. This is all the action of time. Nothing is secure, as Jarasandha has already explained in the previous verses to Shishupal, that don't lament. Why you should lament? Everything in this world is temporary, controlled by a higher force of providence or time. Everything is going on. Same instruction is given in Bhagavad Gita. Of course, one who really understands this above time understanding, that we shouldn't lament anything, because ultimately, you know, we're nothing to do with this material. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Shotitina Kankshiti. One who actually sees things from the eternal plane, from the spiritual platform, then there is no question of lamenting for the comings and goings of this particular material world, because everything is destined to go in course of time. And this itself is a major subject matter, which is dealt with in the Bhagavad Gita, of course. One should not lament. Over and over again, Krishna, shochati, nakankshati, lament or hanker, nashoshayati, marutaha. Again and again, Krishna uses the word shochati, lament. Don't lament, Arjuna, don't lament. Even if you're not on the spiritual platform, there's still no reason to lament, because everyone's born jatasihi dhruva matir, janma dhruva matasyachata. Everyone's born, death is certain. When it was dead, birth is certain. This is inevitable. There's no need to lament. This body, after all, Arjuna, you're not your body. Why we lament when we pour some chemicals down the drain? After all, Rukmini, because she's actually the goddess of fortune, and cannot be touched by somebody like Shishupal. But he was thinking, she's a material, beautiful material woman. So if you think like that, then she's just a bag of chemicals, organized in such a way that you're captivated by these chemicals. That's what they say, isn't it, scientists? You're just a bag of chemicals, right? Isn't it? Is that correct? What's the latest scientific theory? Bag of chemicals or what? Is it?
You ain't nothing but a pack of neurons.
Pack of neurons. You ain't nothing but a bag of neurons. Neurons?
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 Brain cells.
Brain cells? Nothing but brain cells. No other cells.
That's the essential consciousness.
Oh, we got consciousness, okay. But the form which you're seeing is a bag with chemicals inside, is it? Varieties of chemicals made up in such a way that it looks nice or doesn't look nice or whatever it does, and then because of neurons it starts to act in different ways to the other bag of chemicals. One neurotic bag of chemicals likes another neurotic bag and doesn't like another one. This way the bags are going around, embracing bags on the street. Chemicals kissing chemicals, and neurons expressing their love for other chemicals and neurons. Very, very, very obvious what's going on around here. You don't have to be very intelligent to understand all of that. But if you are a little intelligent, you won't understand any of it. This is a load of codswallop in England. I don't know if you ever heard that term. Have you heard that term? Those who are from England, we won't mention what codswallop is. You know what codswallop is, don't you? You've heard the term, yeah. A load of codswallop. Anyone with half a brain would think, well, this is a bunch of rubbish. Anyway, let it be. Chant Hare Krishna. Time will pass by. It'll be another theory next century. As it wasn't so long ago, they had so many different theories about various things. I was just reading last night, the Roman Empire, at one time thought the year was 10 months long. It took them quite a while to work out there were 12 months in a year. Actually, the Roman Empire, a very civilized empire, had this whole calendar at one time which was 10 months long. Whereas the uncivilized Indians, they had it down to the second, you know, but they were very uncivilized. They were barbarians, you know. They didn't understand, actually, we were a bag of chemicals. They're very uncivilized. We're talking about chemicals. We used to look on packets. When I was a kid, we were told to look on the packet or on the box and to make sure there are a lot more chemicals, the better. You know, if you look at some food, and the more chemicals that are on there, that meant it was good food. If it said natural, you had to reject it. That's how we were trained when we were young. You had to look and count the number of chemicals. The more chemicals, the more safer, and the better it was for you. That was their philosophy. Because you're made of chemicals, so you've got to have a lot of chemicals. Right? This is a crazy, crazy world that we're living in. So anyway, back to Purushottam Mass. This month we're going through. It's interesting because lamentation was already there, was also there for Purushottam in the form of, it wasn't Purushottam then, it was called Mahamas. It's a very unfortunate, inauspicious month in the female. A month who was also very, very much lamenting, and by the grace, because everyone rejected her. Nobody wanted to perform her. You may notice that in this particular month, if you look at it, starting yesterday, there are no festivals whatsoever. There are no appearance days or disappearance days. There's only Ekadashi and Dwadashi. That's nothing else. There's nothing else mentioned in this month. Even though it is said to be the most auspicious month, a dozen times more auspicious than Kartik, it's the most auspicious month of the whole universe. She's non-different than Krishna. I said it, well, in one sense, she's in female form, but Krishna is her husband, and she is imbued with all the opulences and qualities and everything good that Krishna imbued in her. She possesses that. So she's very, very blessed. Although she was completely rejected, she has now become the most worshipable month in the whole universe. Now, we happen to be in it right now. It only occurs every 3 or 4 months, 3 or 4 years rather. Very auspicious. And if one doesn't observe it, as we heard last night, Draupadi, she insulted it, insulted the month, therefore she had to be insulted. The Pandavas failed to observe it, therefore they ended up miserable in the Kamyavan forest. So it's important to observe this particular festival, this month. Now, how we observe it? Very simply, by increasing our remembrance of Krishna, our hearing and chanting about Krishna, our devotional practice, especially chanting the holy names of Krishna, studying Prabhupada's books. You don't have to go on to a whole trip of, you know, like even in Kartik, usually there's a little bit more mention of giving things up. But in this particular month, it's more of acceptance of devotional practices. We don't have to worry too much. Those who are on the path of bhakti, those who are on the path of karmakanda, there are all kinds of rules and regulations. You shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, you should perform this thing, that thing. But for those who are on the path of prashnakanda, or the Vaishnavas at least, They should concentrate, as we do on Ekadashi. Ekadashi also is not so much a day in which we have to perform extreme austerities, but more of a day that we increase our hearing and chanting about Krishna. Similarly with this Purushottam Mass, it's a very wonderful opportunity to increase our hearing, an incentive. We need these incentives. We need these incentives to help us to increase our hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is a great incentive to hear and chant about Krishna. We know there's tremendous benefit from hearing and chanting about Krishna this particular month, especially it's the month of Krishna personally, Purushottam Mass. He gave that name. Previously it was Mala Mass, the most unfortunate month. No one even wants to know about it. It's like when there's an eclipse of the sun or something, or moon, and everyone wants to hide away in India. Although usually you're supposed to go and bathe in the river Ganga or something. But it's like usually seen as very inauspicious. So this inauspiciousness became most auspicious. This is the nature of coming in contact with Krishna consciousness. That which is inauspicious, even this bag of chemicals, can become very auspicious when coming into contact with Krishna. Even the time feature works in favor. Ayurharati vaipumsam in the Bhagavatam. Siddha Goswami states that the rising and setting of the sun reduce the duration of life of everyone except for those who are engaged in devotional service, because they're on the eternal platform. Others are completely fighting against time. I've got to get this done. I've got this to do, that to do. What's the point? You lose it all in the end. You work very hard. And what is to show for it all? It's all gone. You have your big... Of course, the Chinese people, when they die, they have a very interesting affair. When at the cremation or the burial, whatever they have, they make paper models of Mercedes-Benz and various palaces, and they're thrown into the fire or the grave along with the deceased person, with the idea that they'll take these things with them when they go on. So they'll be next lifetime, they'll also have that Mercedes-Benz or whatever they like will be with them. But it doesn't work like that. That's not how time works. You don't know what part you'll be playing in the chain, in the wheel of Kala Chakra. Mentions the word here. Kala. This Vedic context does not refer merely to a system of measuring the movements of the planets, weeks, months, and years, but rather to the way things are being moved. This Kala Chakra and the wheel of time, where everything is going around. Some of you say samsara cycle, also a similar thing. Kala Chakra, the wheel of time, everything is going around. No choice, and you know, according to the spokes you're looking through, you see certain things. You know, it's like a wheel. Sometimes they do this. You can see through the spokes of the wheel. So we see it differently according to what position we're in. And we see the whole thing completely differently. Even though it's the same thing we're looking at, we're looking through a different spoke, you can say, or a different vision. And this is the way the whole world is going on. But one who has transcendental vision, he sees it differently. He's not affected by the passing of time. He can then identify with the objects which he sees in the course of time. He doesn't identify with the body as being the self or anything else of this world. He sees it all as Krishna's energy to be used in Krishna's service. And instead of being moved by it, he rather tries to move it in the relationship with Krishna. So when all these things come in contact with Krishna, connect with Krishna, that which is inauspicious, that which causes hankering and lamentation, becomes a source of liberation or a cause of actual freedom and happiness, true happiness. So the material world is not driven by our endeavors, no matter how, as Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj himself would quote sometimes, that one who thinks that they are a mover of this world, we can also meditate upon this, one who thinks that they are a reformer of this world, a controller of this world, is in need of reform. No one can change the course of the movements of this world but by the breadth of one hair. No one can change it but by the breadth of one hair. Everything is perfectly arranged, ordained, and controlled by a supreme source. Everyone is controlled by that supreme being. No one has any real independence in this world. The only reform which is required is the reform of our own consciousness or our own perception of the world. That's the only thing that's needed, and that is evoked by associational contact with the Supreme Lord, especially in the form of his transcendental name, or the transcendental sound vibration, or here in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the association of devotees. This is the reform which is required. This is what will bring time to an end. This will bring time, cessation of time. Everything becomes timeless. It's like when the sages were in Naimisharanya forest, or Pariksit Maharaj on the bank of the Ganga, Yamaraj himself was present, listening to these topics. Everything stops, time stops. Timeless world. There is no effect of time, there is no passing of time. Everything is eternal. There is no more question of hankering or lamenting. Our destiny is already fixed, you can say. There's no more changing going on as such. At least not according to the influence of time. It may change according to the influence of desire. So we're going to finish there. You might have some comments, actually, or questions. Please do share them. And I don't know. I'm sure we can think of something else if we drag the depths of our what do you call it? Neurons? Is that what they are? Where's it gone? Our neuron man has gone. He's gone chasing after some beautiful neurons over outside there somewhere. Wow! Look at those neurons! Wow! I've never seen such beautiful neurons ever. I can't resist those neurons. There's some electrons coming. Watch out! They're dangerous ones. They're incompatible electrons. People are doing all this on the computer now, isn't it? This computer games and things, that's what they're doing. Basically. Three-dimensional form. Two-dimensional form. Yes. Put the light on the matter.
We not only hear Jarasandha is speaking, as in the Upanishad explains that if one hears knowledge from a non-devotee, then it's considered like a diamond in the head of a snake.
Jewel of circumstance.
How much should we take?
We should jump over it quickly. We'll forget these lines. They're dangerous lines. What to speak of the seventh canto of Bhagavatam is a whole chapter. I wrote one drama. I never put it into practice. It's called Hiranyakashipu Vacha. Hiranyakashipu. And it's the title, the beginning of the chapter. It says, Sri Hiranyakashipu Vacha. And it explains that actually he's a great soul. These personalities in the Bhagavatam are playing particular roles in the drama. They're not ordinary fools. They are not. They are servants of the Lord playing particular roles. And this is their role, is to play a demon. In the case of Jarasandha, he was, as we mentioned earlier, very learned. In the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the father-in-law of Kamsa. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, as far as I know, he was either Chankasi or the or the Nawab Hussein, as far as I know, he was Jan Kazi, very learned personality. So they take birth in these pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill the mission of the Lord. Their words, and there's so many words of demons. The Bhagavatam has so many so-called demons' words. Kamsa's words are there. So many times he is speaking. But this is all part of Krishna's pastimes. There's nothing inauspicious in regards to Krishna's pastimes. If it was just his words, and not in relationship with Krishna, everything in relationship with Krishna becomes auspicious. And we can see, if you read in many times in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries, that these demons speak, that Saraswati speaks through them, and their words take on completely different meanings, and they end up glorifying Krishna through their words. So there's many different angles of seeing these things, but this is all orchestrated by the Lord. This is all part of his transcendental show, his transcendental pastimes. And it's exciting, it excites us. If they didn't do this, it would be a bit boring. Most of us are more interested in the demoniac pastimes than the Leela pastimes of, you know, Rasa Leela or something. I mean, some maybe, but I know myself, I'm more in kind of like, because we're on that stage of anartas. See, we ourselves have these demoniac tendencies. Now this is another beauty about this pastime. We may have this tendency ourselves. We would like to have Rukmini, wouldn't we, boys? Wouldn't you like to have Rukmini as your girlfriend or wife? What do you think? Huh? Hands up. If she would, hey, wouldn't you like it? Come on, you're too shy, eh? You think you're Brahmacharis or something or what? Come on. I wouldn't stand a chance if Rukmini were here today. He finished. Fortunately, we're so dull we can't see what Radharani looks like. We're just seeing according to our dull vision. You won't be able to resist. And if Krishna was here, ladies, you would be finished. You would faint. You won't be able to resist it. You know, this is how did we get on to that point? Oh, pastimes. So we all have these tendencies. There's lust and greed and so on. When we don't get what we want, like Shishupal, you go crazy. Sometimes people commit suicide if they don't get their girl. Can you imagine how he felt? You know, he's been building up to a crescendo. He was a little afraid all along, because he had this hunch that this Krishna, although he thought he was dead and gone in one sense, was still around, and he might just play some trick. You know, he was still worried. Really worried. Everyone was worried. They were all worried. And sure enough, Krishna turned up. Ah, damn it, he's in. So they were real worried. But still, at the same time, he was very anticipating. He was very, he was very kind of like, he'd been building up for months. And then all of a sudden, just like that, his life, his whole kind of dreams were just smashed on the spot, practically, you know. You can imagine how he felt. You know, you spent all your time and you get nothing. So much, the most biggest thing in his life, the most beautiful personality in the female body, and all of a sudden she's taken away. So he was devastated. But hearing, and we may have that tendency too, whether it's for a woman or a man or for money or for fame or name, whatever it is, all these particular anartas that we have, which appear in various ways, they're karmic reactions, these anartas, due to our perverse desire, enviousness of Krishna, we're covered over by these various desires, which are anartas, unwanted desires, desires which are not pleasing to Krishna. And they can all be removed when we hear about these various pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which deal with those particular anartas. The result of listening to hearing this from the right source, because we're not hearing it from Jarasandha, we're hearing it from Srila Prabhupada, we're hearing it through Suta Goswami, we're hearing it from Shukadeva Goswami. So it is not from the wrong source, it's not exactly from Jarasandha, it is from the pure devotees. There is their words that are coming to us. They are repeating these words. So it's a little bit different. I was trying to think of an analogy or an example. There are some that are not coming to my mind. I was something that is actually not to be taken or heard, when coming through the right source, becomes very, very effective or very medicinal or very potent like that. So that's what's going on here. We're hearing these words through the pure devotees of the Lord. And thus, We can hear all these various pastimes even if we don't understand them. And if we hear them submissively from the pure devotee of the Lord, the effect will be that it will purify us of whatever it is. Say, for instance, in the case of Indra, his personification of pride, that one becomes cured of pride. Not immediately, of course, depending on our submissive hearing. When we hear the pastimes of Indra trying to pour down rain on Melbourne, on Vrindavan. And it's not very devastating rain right now, but it's better than nothing. But Indra's rain was quite something. Or Brahma stealing away the calves and the cowherd boys. All these various pastimes, the various demons, they are actually here in those pastimes. They represent various anartas. We can discuss that tomorrow, maybe. Maybe. Let's see, there's no purport for quite a few verses, so I don't know what the topic will be. Maybe. Let's see. And that's what happens. This is therapeutic effect of hearing these pastimes, medicinal effect, of hearing these pastimes, is it cures us of the very disease Jarasandha or Shishupal suffer from. And they are a part of the whole scene. Part of the scene. I'm sure those are in the medical world. Mahaprabhu, you could think of some good examples to illustrate this. How you use one thing. Prabhupada says, take one thorn to remove another thorn. Simple one. To get a thorn which is stuck in your side, you have to use another thorn to get it out. So, through these various pastimes, Krishna is performing joyful pastimes, various pastimes which we can hear about, which we can absorb ourselves in, remember, think about, especially in Purushottam Mass. It's a great opportunity to remember Krishna book. We should all read the Krishna book in this month very much, more than usual, which for some of us may mean we read one word during this month. For some of us it may mean we have to read the whole book. It varies according to one to the next. For some of us it means we have to buy the Krishna book if you don't have it. Or you have to get one copy. If you haven't got one in the temple, you may have one here already, I hope. But read the Krishna book in this month and read these pastimes, and it's very, very purifying, very wonderful to hear Krishna having great fun in the forest with his cowherd boys, killing one demon. Prabhupada said he would kill one or two demons before lunch regularly every day. Although there's only about 15 mentioned in the Krishna book, actually. Very few. You can't really include Brahma and Indra. You can, but they're not. I mean, they are demonic mentality, you can say, it came upon them. But and pulling down the twin Arjuna trees, these ones are there. But the direct demons who Krishna had a direct fight with, only I think there's only about 15 of them mentioned in the Krishna book. There are a lot more. At least if we take Prabhupada's words on face value, every day one or two demons were killed before lunch or breakfast, one or the other. So I mean that adds up. I mean, he wasn't in Vrindavan all that long, but it still adds up. Krishna liked killing demons, you know. It's one of his favorite pastimes. And these demons are for those, especially those who are not freed of anartas. They are anartas. So this is to help bring us past the anarta nibbiti, to bring us to the anarta nibbiti stage. And to get past that stage, we have to hear these pastimes from the pure devotee. Not that you just hear them willy-nilly, but we have to hear them. And I bet you haven't heard that term before, willy-nilly. That's 50 years old, that one. Have you heard it before? Mahatma's heard it. You guys are living in the past. What's the latest term? I don't know. Just whimsically. But we hear it from the pure devotee. And when we hear it from the pure devotee, it has that medicinal effect. Vibhushiti Chotamanobi Ramat. When we hear it, Nivritta Trishna will be Yamana Vibhushiti Chotamanobi Ramat. And when we hear these pastimes, Gutama Shloka Kunanavada, then it becomes medicinal, Vibhushiti, becomes purifying to our minds. Well, Prabhupada clearly says in many places that some people, they just want to hear the pastimes of the, Krishna with the gopis, or the pastimes of the, let's say, the Rasa Leela, or the pastimes of the cowherd boys with Mother Yasoda, and these very intimate pastimes, loving pastimes. And they don't want to hear about the battle of Kurukshetra, they don't want to hear about the killing of demons and so on. Prabhupada, many says, this is wrong, actually. We should hear all these pastimes. They are relish. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, more than anything else, would like to hear the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu and Dhruva and Srinadev. At least with his general devotees, they would hear these. With his intimate associates, maybe go deeper, but with a vast majority of devotees, these pastimes are absolutely essential to hear and to understand. and to apply in our lives to remove all the misconceptions, all the attachments we have in this world, all the causes of lamentation and hankering and so on and so forth, are removed by hearing these pastimes. This is the secret of these pastimes. That one can also become freed of hankering and lamentation, and freed of bodily identification, freed of material attachment, and so on and so forth, by submissive hearing from the right source of these particular pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're all there. They're not just things that happen. They're all orchestrated by the Lord for his own personal pastimes, but also for the benefit of all the conditioned souls in the universe. So many ways they're beneficial.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
Sorry, I'm sitting behind you. I came in a bit late, but I heard Krishnamurti mention that taking advice from a non-devotee was like taking a diamond from the head of the snake. But I heard some, I know it all pertains to Srimad Bhagavatam, but I heard somewhere, and I can't tell you the source, that Srimad Prabhupada was such a pure devotee that he only saw the super soul in every person, and he would receive answers from non-devotees as well. And I thought if you could comment on that.
Oh, yeah. Pure devotee sees Krishna present everywhere. Sees Krishna's hand working in everything. Now we can practice that in the Ishopanishad, the same thing is mentioned, that the behavior of the topmost devotee, the Mahatma, the Paramahamsa, is to see everything in relation with Krishna. He sees Krishna's hand working everywhere. And the second devotee, or the Madhyamadikari, he practices the process of the pure devotee. He practices, although he hasn't doesn't have that realization, he follows in the footsteps of the pure devotee of the Lord. We have to be a little careful, of course, when it says to hear from or associate with or to learn from. There's no doubt that in the course of preaching we can learn from so many ways, we can see Krishna's hand working. We just have to be very careful that that we don't ourselves get, caught in the association of others in this world. It can be a little sensitive if we're not very, very advanced. But certainly, even in those who are called, at least the devotee can practice this much, that when he sees other people in this world who are absorbed in various material endeavors, there's various ways we can learn, there are many ways we discuss for a long time on it, but just one point, for instance, when maybe they give us they deal with us in a way which is a little disturbing to us, we can understand that actually Krishna is trying to point something out through this person, who may be under the modes of nature, but is ultimately also under Krishna's control. Is trying to point something out to me which I should learn from. I should be perceptive and see what Krishna is teaching me through this person's behavior or through the circumstances which I find myself in. The body should always be open to learning and to understanding where Krishna's hand is behind everything. He's behind, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. So trying to see what the Lord has in mind here. How is it I can understand this so that I can become more Krishna conscious in happiness or in distress? There's certainly the fact is there. On the other hand, of course, we should be a little bit careful and we may not be so intelligent to know, like for instance, somehow or another, a beautiful girl comes up to us and maybe not as beautiful as Rukmini even, but still beautiful enough to attract our minds. And we think, oh, I wonder what Krishna is trying to teach me here. He's teaching me to find out more about beautiful girls. That must be what he's trying to teach me. Let me go deeply into this and learn all about them. We have to be very, very careful how our intelligence may sometimes get bewildered. So you have to be a little careful not to get overwhelmed. A pure devotee won't be overwhelmed, like Haridas Thakur. Will not be overwhelmed even in the face of beautiful young girls or handsome young men or whatever it is, or the opportunity of great wealth and position and fame and so many other things that Maya's business is to tempt us with. A little bit careful not to become waylaid by these tempts. Although one is very advanced, he'll just turn all these things towards Krishna. He even turns Maya to Krishna. But those who are not so advanced, we have to be a little bit careful. Not that we're completely aloof and blind. We have our business to do, and we have to do our service. We have to be constantly taking shelter of Krishna in our hearts so that we're not perplexed or bewildered by these things of this world, drawn into it. Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you. A very important point.
Probably when we go out of the temple, when we see the opposite sex, when we see an opposite sex, I'm saying,
when I see an opposite sex,
I get attracted to them. And instead of seeing. And
sit over here.
Huh? Still, I will be attracted there also.
You're honest. It's really honest. I think you deserve. We should offer you obeisances. You're an honest person.
Should I avoid, like, when I go into sleep and I see an opposite sex, should I avoid seeing them? Or should I just see them and Krishna will arrive? Whenever I see them, the lust is generated basically. So should I avoid seeing them or should I see them and still,
There's various things you can do. This is a very down to earth question, isn't it? But this is actually speaking, we sometimes live in the clouds. I tell you honestly, we're living in a cloud. We think that, we're talking about all these things and we're living in clouds half the time. This is reality, which everyone is faced with. And Prabhupada said we should discuss these things, maybe not in open forums always, but sometimes this is okay for an open forum. Something must be discussed, they have to be discussed in confidence. Then Brahmacharya said they should discuss these things over and over and over again together. These are realities, and so with the Brahmacharinas, householders, everything. The sort of things that happen. I mean, you mentioned women. I was just in Brisbane, and amazing enough, one of the leading preachers there, I don't want to implicate anyone, came up to me and asked for some advice. And he was talking about the fact that men are not attracted to women anymore. They seem to be attracted to men. Out of six people he's cultivating, out of six young men he's cultivating, but he thought were going to be candidates for the Brahmacharya Ashram, five of them had this tendency. You don't know what's under the surface these days. Just churning. Another one, without mentioning any names, was thinking he was in the wrong sex and was going about changing it. So this is the world around you right now. People are not walking along the street, self-controlled souls anymore, looking at women so much. They're actually just not interested. They're interested in something else. There's unlimited different kind of varieties of this. But the general point of attraction to the sense objects, whether it's man, woman, dog, whatever it is very strong, especially, of course, the attraction from man to a woman is very, very powerful. It's the most powerful. She represents for a man, she represents Maya. So we have to be careful, but you can't necessarily, it's not a good idea to walk around with blinkers on or something like this. I don't look or talk to women, I don't have anything to do with it. It's not practically possible in this age. One time Bhakti Vikash Maharaj was in Sringeri Math in South India, one of the mutts of the Shankar Sampradaya. He was talking to one of their young sannyasis. He has a very friendly actually. And they're Mayavadis, you can say, or impersonalists. I mean, they're very learned also. They know much, they probably know even in one sense, from the theoretical point of view, more of our Vaishnava Shastras than we do, many of them. And anyway, he was saying that in your ISKCON, he knows a lot about ISKCON, that he said, if we had to do what your ISKCON sannyasis had to do, I don't think any of us would maintain our vows. That's what he said. He said, we don't have anything to do with women. We right from birth, they're pretty much secluded or isolated up until a certain point, unless they're big acharyas or something. They practically have nothing to do, the sannyasis, with any contact with women whatsoever. It's not practical. Our business is to preach. Our business is to preach. So we fight. We do our duty, whatever it may be at the moment. Are you studying or working? Working?
Working.
So you have your work to do, and we have to take shelter of Krishna. The only solution to this is not blindfolds. It's not spitting. When I was a young brahmachari, it says, Jumunacharya said you have to spit at him. I read it. Isn't that what he said?
No.
I'm just joking, ladies. Don't get me wrong. This is how, honestly speaking, how some of the young boys were thinking in the 60s and 70s. Jumunacharya, it was Jumunacharya, wasn't it? He said, whenever a young girl comes along, I have to spit at her. Is that what he said?
No.
No?
No?
No.
What did he say?
No. Huh? He spits on the
dog. On the thought. What's the thought? That's some neurons, right? Spit on the neurons. Some electrons spitting on neurons. Those female neurons.
Oh, On sex.
Spit on sex.
Yeah.
Well, you better not speak out too loudly in the comment in the public today. They'll spit on you. Big thing nowadays. Yeah, it's in your own heart. It's not the other person. There's nothing wrong with the other person at all. It's not the other person that's at fault. It's our perception. There's nothing wrong, Father said, with men or women, but it's how we see them. So we have to change our consciousness. So there's two things there. Detachment means a healthy relationship. If you're married, of course, that's different. But if you're not married, then the relationship between men and women should be respectful, very respectful, but it shouldn't be intimate. And sometimes you're unavoidable because you're a working man in the course of working sometimes, just like the other day. There was a program in Dunedin a few weeks ago. I don't know anything. So, you know how it is in these college programs. Sometimes they don't understand. They just come before you know what's going on. They do what they do with other men with you, and it's like it's quite embarrassing. I won't mention what it was, but quite embarrassing. I didn't go that far. But these things happen in this world. It's not easy in preaching Krishna consciousness or living in this world. So we have to be constantly taking shelter of Krishna, taking shelter of the holy name and the association of devotees. This is our only shelter, our only protection from the temptations of this maya, of the material world, whether we're men or women, body, whatever it may be, female electrons or male electrons or whatever they're called, neutrons, cells, this thing, that thing, I don't know what they all are. Different names they put to the bags. But whatever they are called, female bag, male bag, they're all the same, really. Underneath the surface, they may move slightly differently. Same thing goes on. Maybe the magnetic forces are slightly different, but basically they're the same things going on. We have to become freed of this and rise above this bodily identification. This is the only real solution. Just blindfolding or putting locks and chains and things across here and all this is not going to work. We actually have to have that. We have to have a higher taste ultimately. But just be a little careful. We have to be a little careful. It's nothing surprising that a man becomes influenced by it when seeing a young lady. That's quite normal. But take it as an opportunity. Help! Instead of planning. It's not the thing. It's what we do with it that counts. It's how we relate to it. There's nothing wrong with beautiful young girls or handsome men. They're perfectly arranged by Krishna. But it's how we see them. So try to see it in such a way that it's a beautiful creation of Krishna. And Krishna, please save me from thinking that this is for my enjoyment. This is meant for your enjoyment. And we pray to Krishna, please protect me. You can take it as an opportunity to take shelter of Krishna also. Someone's in these situations. So a healthy is attachment, a healthy detachment, and a healthy practice of... like Krishna says, very difficult to control, but by regulation, practice and detachment, one can conquer over these tendencies or these attractions, so to speak. So a little detachment is there. Society, modern day society, doesn't help much there, but at least we can, to some extent, without offending or making our situation unbalanced in our social or business dealings, etc. And at the same time practicing Krishna consciousness to try to strengthen us so that we're not attracted anyway, even if we're in the midst of it. Big topic. Modern society doesn't exactly help very much. It doesn't even support it. Sometimes they even condemn this idea of the sexes having different spheres mostly to work in. But all the powerful, for instance, if we go back in European history and we look at the Spartans and the Trojans and all these powerful, groups, they were very strict on association between men and women. Very, very strict. Prabhupada did not enforce such strictness, but he was at the same time constantly reminding us of the purpose of human life. Is not to remain in this material world attached, men to women, women to men, and so on. But the purpose is to become attached to Krishna. That's what we're here for. If it's too overwhelming, then the process is to get married. Simple process. That's the natural system. Nothing wrong with that at all. Anything else? If you're having these personal problems, then discuss with other devotees in specifics on it and how we can help to strengthen ourselves in the different situations we're in. But the only real shelter is Krishna. There's no mechanical means to actually solve the problem. You may be like a painkiller, you may be able to reduce the temporary effects by various mechanical methodology. But we have to work on the root, which is lust. We have to cleanse out lust. Lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. The enemy of the world is not a man or a woman. The enemy of the world is not anything. It's not Maya even. Don't blame Maya, don't blame Krishna, don't blame this other person. It wasn't my fault, it was her fault. Well, nothing to do with me, it was her fault. I wouldn't think like that, she did it. It was her fault. It was his fault. No, it's our lust. That's the problem. We have to deal with lust. Lust is overcome. Spiritual strength. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, with spiritual strength we have to conquer over this insatiable enemy known as lust. He's not looking that way anymore. Good. Okay. Oh, last point. Point? 2 points. This one. Oh, is there going to be Hari Nam today? Okay, that's, we'll mention that in a minute. And your point was? Did you have a point? No?
Yes.
My mother?
Yes, once said, I hope you loved your mother. Because you did have a mother who gave you birth.
Sure. No, we weren't like that. I wasn't one of those ones in that category. That was how some of the brahmacharas were trying to avoid their attraction by just, or let's say, trying to impose this kind of artificial type of a shelter, which is not at all what Prabhupada said. It's not what Jimmacharya said. And it's not what anyone actually said very much, but it was a type of mentality. And it's the opposite of attachment is rejection, raga dvesha. Raga is attachment, dvesha is aversion. So both these things have to be understood, and ultimately we have to transcend both of the attachment and the rejection in this world, and have to see everything in this world in relation with Krishna. And there's no attraction or repulsion to anything. Everything is seen in its relation with Krishna, whatever it is, in this world. So there is no question of that being Prabhupada's mood at all. But some devotees, because they're dealing with coming out of a very, say, conditioned situation, a very lusty situation, some devotees, they were very much artificially trying to use this as a kind of a shelter. There's no shelter at all. It's the same side, the other side of the same coin, that we're covered by lust. It's lust which is the only enemy, nobody else. Enemy lust means within our own hearts, our own perception, our own lusty attitude. That has to be changed. So Jamunacharya spits at the thought, not at the object, not at the person, but the very thought that I want to enjoy that person instead of serving them. That I want to enjoy that person instead of respecting them, and so on. That he spits on that thought. Last point, Mahatma. You were going to say something? No? Yeah, we'll go back to your question in a minute. I thought you had your hand up.
I was going to say that Srila Prabhupada said that we are pure spiritual souls, and nothing can attract the soul except the spiritual thing. And all these pastimes means the creation of Lord Krishna. And Bhagavatam is telling us right from the first verse what is reality and what is not real. So if we take shelter of Krishna, we get attached to the lotus feet of Krishna more and more by hearing the Bhagavatam Katha, then we'll be in the spiritual world.
Yes. If we just keep trying to see everything in relation with Krishna, Bhagavad Gita is full up with statements of Krishna, how to see the material world in relationship with Him. How to remember Him in everything. How to remember Him even in sex life. How to see Him in everything. Full of it. Well, to speak of the Bhagavatam, which is the spiritual world, everything in the Bhashima Bhagavatam is completely transcendental. It is not of this world. All the personalities there are hand-picked to take their roles in this transcendental literature for our own particular benefit. And ultimately, of course, one will see everything as spiritual. They say everything in contact with spirit becomes spirit. So if we keep in contact with spirit, just like an iron rod entering into a fire becomes like fire, if we keep ourselves always, that's why that problem, some say, we've got to keep ourselves in the fire of Krishna consciousness. It's like a blazing fire. Blazing fire. I mean, what do these pastimes lead to? They only lead to remembrance of Krishna. That's all they do. And that's the purpose of the Bhagavatam, to remind us of Krishna always. In this way, we'll not be disturbed by the... this is the medicine. We cut through the knots of attachment in this world by remembering the personality of Godhead. This is how it works. By remembering. So all these pastimes remind us of Krishna. Sometimes it's purposely arranged. And even in Vrindavan it said, snakes are there in Vrindavan. This in Gokul. Snakes are there, what for? When snakes suddenly, gopis are going on the path. Suddenly a snake comes in. Ah! Krishna! They scream, Krishna! They don't say, help! They just scream, Krishna. They don't even try to stop the snake. They just scream for Krishna. When demons come, they don't... Sometimes the cowboys have a bit of fun, but generally they just call out to Krishna, save us. They just call out to Krishna. In every situation is like that. When we're in any perplexity, Krishna, save me. Help, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Remember Krishna. Everything can be seen like that as an opportunity to remember Krishna. Sankirtan, is there going to be Harinam this evening?
Yes.
What time?
6:30.
Oh, I won't be there at 6:30. I've got a class at 6:15. You can, by all means, go ahead, but I don't think I'll be there. So you're going to take Harinam out tonight? 6:30? If you started at 5:30, I could go. I can't start. I'm 6:15, I think, is 6:15, isn't it?
5:30?
Well, not everyone. You can carry on, and others can come. You can come back to Gopal's at 6:15. And then start again at 6:30. That's what we do, okay? 5:30 till 6:15, and then at 6:30 again at Gopal. So you can come for both shifts, one shift. You've got to choose one or the other. Both shifts. You just carry on as long as you can. So this evening, 5:30 outside of Gopala's. Gopal's or Crossways?
Gopal's.
Gopal's, not Crossways. Mm-hmm. Crossways?
Huh? Crossways.
So we don't go outside of Crossways.
No.
No. Don't want to disturb them. We don't want to disturb them by chanting Hare Krishna. What do you do down there? They don't chant? They chant down there.
Half chant.
Ah, they'll all be chanting, don't worry. Everyone loves chanting Hare Krishna. The whole universe becoming more and more pious. Okay, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Antarashtra Bhagavatam ki jai.